The Story of Our Health Message, Chapter 17, Reaching for High Standards. The widening influence of the health reformer was drawing to the Health Reform Institute many patients of means and influence. More and more frequently, the managers were disappointed and pained, as these would say, "Your publishing buildings and your college are first class, but your health department is third rate." They would remain perhaps only a few days and then leave, disappointed with buildings, facilities, and physicians. So it was that, though the patronage seemed encouragingly large, a high proportion of the patients who remained were those accepted at reduced rates, and the Institute was able to continue only a feeble financial existence. Speaking of these conditions, in a manner revealing a clear discernment of the key to the situation, Elder White said, "We became satisfied that our health institute could not rise to eminence and the full measure of usefulness without thoroughly educated physicians to stand at the head of it. We laid our plans to gain this point, better educated physicians. The cause of health reform might well be begun by discarding the use of drugs, adopting a rational diet, and using water and other natural agencies as remedies for disease. But it was impossible to make a strong appeal in its behalf to the more educated and cultured classes of society until there was a leadership whose scientific knowledge could command respect. The benefits of rational treatment had been demonstrated empirically, but this was not sufficient. The scientific and physiologic principles for the success of certain rational and therapeutic agencies must be made clear. This required a much more thorough knowledge of chemistry, physiology, anatomy, and materia medica than could be taught during the short course at the Hygiotherapeutic College. These conditions, together with the counsel through the spirit of prophecy against novices practicing as physicians, and calling for the most thorough training, were strong factors in leading Elder James White to realize that even the physicians connected with the Health Reform Institute were lacking in the scientific knowledge necessary for the intelligent diagnosis and treatment of the many diseases of mankind. God had greatly blessed the consecrated efforts of these physicians as they faithfully endeavored to practice in harmony with the principles set forth in the council that had come to them. The rational remedies that they had learned in Dr. Trawl's Hygiotherapeutic College and had seen practiced by Dr. Jackson at his institution in Dansville, New York, were as a rule sound in theory and practice. It was impossible, however, for the Health Reform Institute to obtain favorable recognition among the best and most progressive members of the medical profession as long as some of the physicians on the staff were initially equipped for their service with only a few months of training. If they were to continue to criticize the practice of physicians of the day, they must be able to bring to the discussion of their points of difference a storehouse of scientific knowledge of chemistry, anatomy, and physiology. They must be able to keep abreast of the important medical discoveries that were being made at this time. J.H. Kellogg and medical training. There were some who, having seen the apparent prosperity of the institution, had continued to urge that it be enlarged. But with this Elder White could not agree. To Elder G.I. Butler, the president of the General Conference, he wrote, "Show me the doctors and then build away. Hustle young men off to some doctor mill and get ready. Our institute buildings are already larger than our doctors." Early in the 70s, Elder and Mrs. James White had arranged for four young men to attend the Hygiotherapeutic College at Florence Heights, New Jersey, and learn what they could during the short-term course that Dr. Trawl and his associates were conducting, with special reference to hygienic methods of treating disease. After completing the brief course of study and receiving his degree of MD, one of these students, J.H. Kellogg, enrolled at the Bellevue Hospital Medical College, New York City, and took the regular three-year course of training. The hospital with which this medical school was connected was the largest in New York City. On its staff were many of the leading specialists in the various forms of disease. Elder White and other members of the Health Reform Institute board recognized in J.H. Kellogg a young man of talent and industry. They believed that he was so thoroughly conversant with the principles of reform that he could continue his studies in a medical course without being influenced to compromise those principles, and Elder White encouraged him to continue his medical education till he had received the best training possible. In order that he might not be delayed in this enterprise, Elder White lent him $1,000 to meet his expenses in New York. Dr. J.H. Kellogg appointed editor. Even before he had completed the advanced medical course, Dr. Kellogg was called to succeed Elder White as editor of the Health Reformer, and for several months edited the journal from New York City. In taking over this responsibility, he paid the following tribute to his predecessor and commented on his success in re-establishing the popularity of the health reformer. "With myself, the sincere regret deepens into sorrow that he should be so pressed with other urgent editorial duties as to feel it necessary to remove his name from the head of the journal which he has been the chief means of raising to its present state of prosperity and usefulness. Especially is this the case when we recollect the general discouragement which brooded over the prospects of the reformer a few years since, when Elder White consented to add its editorship to his other burdens, and undertook the task of reassuring its faltering patrons, extending its sphere of influence, and establishing upon a broader and better foundation the whole tone and character of the journal. Then its friends were losing their interest, being discouraged by the advocacy of extreme and radical positions. Its circulation was lessening, and the prospect for the future was exceedingly gloomy. Since that time, a revolution has occurred, being brought about by the judicious management of the editor, whose many years' experience in journalism eminently qualified him for the task. And now we see the same journal presenting a wholly different picture. Its friends are constantly increasing in numbers, and its influence has been rapidly extending, until it now numbers its readers by tens of thousands. Under Dr. Kellogg's able editorial guidance, the Health Reformer continued its steady growth in influence. 6 months after he entered upon his work, the journal had reached a circulation of more than 20,000 copies, and he believed that the subscription list would soon number 50,000 names. An interesting report. It is gratifying also to note that by this time there was among the medical profession generally a perceptible change in their attitude toward the use of hydrotherapy in the treatment of disease. In a report of a meeting of the New York Academy of Sciences, Dr. Kellogg, who was present, said that the learned president of the society, Dr. Austin Flint, read a paper on the researches of Curry and recent views concerning the medical use of cold water. The lecture room was well filled with an interested audience of doctors. After describing certain features of the modern history of hydropathy, Dr. Flint related some very interesting cases in which water was employed as the chief remedy with the most excellent success. Dr. Flint was followed by the venerable Dr. Richards, who related his experience in the use of water in treating disease. He spoke of using hydrotherapy during an epidemic of typhoid fever with such remarkable success as to astonish old practitioners. Another, a Dr. Doyle, gave an interesting resume of 10 years' experience in the use of water, with uniform success. In concluding his report of this meeting, Dr. Kellogg said, "The sentiment of the audience, which was wholly composed of medical gentlemen, was shown by the hearty applause with which the remarks of each speaker were received. We did not fail to do our part in the cheering, and would warmly commend the good sense, honesty, and evident desire for truth, which led these eminent gentlemen to make so frank an avowal of a truth which, as hygienists, we all entertain. The trend among regular physicians to recognize the value of the rational treatment of disease made possible a much more amicable relation between them and the physicians at the Health Reform Institute." After having spent 3 years in New York, Dr. Kellogg was graduated from the Bellevue Hospital Medical School in 1875. A prospectus of this institution shows that at that time it was possible for future medical students to take a portion of their education from any well-qualified physician. We find that in harmony with this provision, Dr. Kellogg, on his return to Battle Creek, proceeded without delay to conduct classes with other young men as a preparatory part of their medical course, which might be completed at regular institutions. We have a glimpse of the method in which the classwork was conducted in a letter to W.C. White, under date of May 9, 1875, where E.J. Wagoner reports taking chemistry and anatomy with J.H. Kellogg as tutor, and says, "We meet every Saturday evening to recite. We usually spin out until nearly 12 o'clock, but last night it was about 1, and John made us stay all night, so we did not get away until 5 a.m. He thinks we are doing well." The Health Reformer popular. A few weeks later, in a vein of humor, he gave a more detailed account of their daily program and preparation for the weekly recitation. "Our daily life is somewhat as follows. We get up in the morning and sit down for a little study. Then we go to breakfast and prayers. Then, if nothing special is to be done, we return to our work and engage in study till nearly bath time, if it is bath day. We then go to administer a suitable dose of water or lightning to several specimens of poor suffering humanity. Then more study. Next, dinner. Then perhaps something else or more study. In the afternoon, there will probably be some movements to give to someone who is too lazy to exercise himself. Then we study till we go to bed, unless we recite or have special business elsewhere. In addition to his work of tutoring the young men in their medical studies, Dr. Kellogg was able to give more time to editorial work on the health reformer. He led out also in preparing the Hygienic Family Almanac, an annual first prepared in the summer of 1874. This proved to be a very popular work, and the church membership rallied enthusiastically to its circulation. By January 1, 1875, as many as 47,000 copies of the first number had been printed. Agents and canvassers reported ready sales. The children were selling scores of them. Hundreds were placed in friendly stores, where they were sold or given away. In some instances, it was sold on railroad trains. Elder White wrote, "It contains as much of the most valuable reading on the subject of health as is found in a 32-page tract, besides all else usually pertaining to an almanac. It is just the thing to place at the firesides of 25,000 of your friends you wish to instruct on the health question." A young man, who was later to become a well-known minister, was inspired to employ the poetic muse in urging the distribution of the second edition of this publication. Under the heading, Health Almanac, he wrote, "Oh, the blessing of health, who its worth can declare? Yet how many are sick, and the healthy how rare! In a land of great light, and of blessings untold, how few seem to think good health better than gold. How ignorant our race, how lamentably blind, with regard to the laws of the body and mind. Do you, reader, rejoice in the light of hygiene? If so, is your light by your works being seen? How can you withhold these invaluable facts, so clearly expressed in our little health tracts? Oh, scatter them freely. Let not your hand slack. Above all, distribute the health almanac. New health publications." During the latter part of 1874, Dr. Kellogg had written 5 health tracts bearing the titles, Dyspepsia, Principles of Health Reform, Startling Facts About Tobacco, 25 Reasons for Tobacco Using Briefly Answered, Tea, Coffee, and Pork. Within a few weeks after their publication, it was reported that an edition of 10,000 each had been quickly exhausted and that a second edition of 15,000 each was already on the press. The cause of health reform received a still further impetus by the preparation and production of the Hygienic Cookbook, a booklet of about 100 pages. The recipes were preceded by an introduction setting forth the principles of healthful diet and pointing out the reasons for discarding certain unwholesome foods, spices, stimulants, and narcotics. At the annual meeting of the Health Reform Institute in 1876, Dr. J.H. Kellogg was made medical superintendent. Another physician, Dr. Kate Lindsay, a graduate of the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, was also added to the staff. No abrupt change was made, however, in the personnel of physicians. Doctors Fairfield, Sprague, and Lamson remained there, and the work was carried forward progressively, building upon the strong foundation already laid. Elder James White, in the following words, expressed his elation and his high hopes for the future growth of the institution. "We have never seen as bright a prospect of success before our health institute as at the present time. For more than 5 years we have been laying our plans that our health institute should have the benefits of the highest, most thoroughly educated and cultivated medical talent in the nation. God has helped in this work thus far, and we trust his help to its full completion. And that which gives us hope above all others is that those who tremblingly take their responsible positions are deeply imbued with the spirit of Christian temperance, and with a sense of the need of the help of God in all the labors of love for the afflicted." A new era began in the health movement, and so began a new era in the health reform movement among Seventh-day Adventists. The leadership of members of the medical profession, more highly trained in scientific lines, resulted not so much in altering the principles upon which the work had been carried forward for a decade as to justify these principles by giving satisfactory reasons for their adoption in the treatment of the sick and the education of all. In the light of further knowledge, some of the methods used at the Institute might be deemed ultra, but statements that have appeared in certain quarters that prior to this time it had been only a struggling water cure, and that its procedure was wholly irrational, cannot be substantiated by well-ascertained facts. It would be difficult to harmonize such a disparaging view with statements found in a prospectus put out by the New Physicians, under date of October 19, 1876. Regarding the former work of the institution, they point out that during the 11 years of its operation it had successfully treated more than 2,000 patients with an average of only one death a year among those received for treatment. And furthermore, the claim that many types of rational remedies were employed was repeated. The public was informed that this institution is not a water cure, either does it employ, exclusively, any special method of treatment, but the plan upon which it is carried on is to employ all remedial agents, applying each to the cases of which it is especially adapted. All diseases are treated here in a thoroughly scientific manner, and with a degree of success unattainable under any other plan of treatment. Besides the usual remedies, the physicians employ, together with all hydropathic appliances, electricity, Swedish movements, lift cure, and the modified Russian and Turkish baths. A declaration of aims. Here is no declaration of new principles, for only 8 months after the opening of the institution in September, 1866, the following statement had been publicly made. The notions which many entertain of a water cure are very erroneous and calculated to prejudice and mislead the minds of many candid individuals against such institutions. They suppose that water is the only agent used in the treatment of disease, which is far from being correct. But on the contrary, in an institution like ours, water is only one of the agencies used to aid nature in restoring the sick. It is our aim in conducting the Health Institute to bring to our aid, in the treatment of disease, all the means which are calculated to ensure the safest and speediest possible cure. We do not intend to have any lack on our part in making available all modern improvements in treating disease on true hygienic principles. Despite the weaknesses and imperfections of the work and workers, it had, under the blessing of God, made progress, and the new medical staff only built well upon a strong foundation that was already laid. Furthermore, they had the advantage of profiting by the mistakes as well as by the wisdom of the former directors of the institution.